It would also have been like a total different trip, right? If you would do this alone.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Tripology. I'm Alan and I'm here with the ever inaudible Adam.
I've been loving these last few episodes, mate. I can't tell you how much I've enjoyed hearing about your trip.
Yeah, because you've had the last 2 weeks off, in a sense, haven't you? Just listening to audio recordings of my adventures. And the Tripology fans, they'll be sad to hear, maybe, that there's not that much Adam this week, because we're going to listen to a recording I made with Emmy and Lucas, my trekking partners, on the Two Passes trek in the Himalayas, as we discuss all about our adventures. Are you ready to listen now?
Yeah, they're people that I can't wait to meet. I'm sure I will one day. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to it.
Let's hear it now.
In a time before the pandemic, before the PlayStation 5, before Rishi Sunak, there existed a kind of pact between all the European countries, allowing them to move freely with one another in a kind of union. But then a dark day of divisive politics emerged, and that pact was broken up until three brave ambassadors, three brave travellers came together to hike the Three Passes together. I'm Alan from the UK. And with me is Lucas from the very tiny but very fierce nation of Belgium.
I like this one.
And we also have Emmy from the winners of the 2009 Handball World Champion. It's France.
Hello. Handball.
Yeah, handball. the French game of handball. It's such a pleasure to have you guys on the podcast. The Tripology audience know you from my little Himalayan voice recordings where I told them all about us going on this trek together. Such an honor to have you here on the podcast talking with me.
Thank you. I love it to be here.
Yeah, I love you to be here. You guys have quickly become two of my favorite people. Aww. I love you very dearly. We went on an amazing trek together. Let's talk about it, because the Tripology fans are all interested. What are your guys' perspective? We want to hear trip highlights. We want to hear the good times, the bad times, the awful times, the times where we got altitude sickness, the times where we were up to our shins in yak feces.
We should start with the good times, I think.
I think it's a good idea to start with the good times. So, Lucas, the Belgian man on the podcast today, there's a lot of dogs. We're on a rooftop in a hostel in Kathmandu. It's the best place we could find to record. You are sort of on a vacation, right? Really?
Yeah. I took like a bit more than 23 days off, something like that, from work. And like some, I think it was before summer, I just booked the flights to Nepal. Didn't really have a plan, but I was like, yeah, you can do really nice hikes here. So let's do it. Then 4 days before I left or so, I already booked the hostel, and then we got in touch, right?
Yeah, so we got in touch on like a Hostel World app. So there's an inbuilt chat function when you sort of book a place to stay in Kathmandu. You can also talk to other travelers. That's how we've all connected.
Yeah.
I think it's a really brave thing to just like go away for 23 days with the intention of doing something as extreme as a Himalayan trek.
Yeah, it's quite experience. I also didn't expect it would be like immediately for 16 days trek.
Yeah.
Because it's quite long. I think the longest I ever did was like 5 days max or so. Mm. And then I started looking for the hikes here and I was like, oh, okay. You need like 15 days minimum. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
And then with two strangers. Okay. Let's see what that gives.
It goes to show there's all different types, though, because I think we talk on Tripology about like long-term, one-way ticket travel. But as long as you're doing something unique and interesting, well, that's what travel is all about as a concept, right? Like, you could have chosen to take a nice, relaxing vacation on a beach, but instead you decide to do something with strangers that challenged you. It was a little bit more kind of interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. It still really feels like traveling for a longer time, but I just took like a small bit out of it.
Yeah, amazing. Well, I'm incredibly proud of you. Like, I think it's just been an incredible adventure. Emmy, you're on a slightly longer excursion. You're in South Asia for a more of an extended period of time.
Yeah, the trek was one of the reasons I came to Nepal, I guess. But I kind of like last minute decided to do this trek, which was second trek. And I guess it was, I didn't have like the same constraints that you like there with the specific schedule. It was just like I had some free time at that point, so I just decided to go.
Yeah. It's been one of the most transformative adventures of my travels so far, even in over the last decade, because I think it kind of is the first time in a while that I've been out on a long trip, but it was transformative in the sense that there was a lot of time to think. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of time to be alone with thoughts, but there was also a lot of time to share thoughts and perspectives with ultimately two strangers. We were really thrown into the deep end as a friendship group. We just met and immediately we were like, these people that you've just met, you're going to spend 24 hours a day with them. They're going to be the first people you see when you wake up, the last people when you go to sleep. And I think it was like a roaring success from a social, psychological perspective. We got on really well, didn't we?
Definitely. Yeah.
And there were some funny things that happened on the trek. I think it's difficult to recall just one. Lucas, have you got a favorite moment from the trip that really, what are you going to take back to Belgium and be like, that was a highlight for me?
No, I have to think about that one. There are so many, but if I think about the trekking, like the, from terms of views and like the feeling, I think going up after the glacier, reaching Gokyo, seeing the lake, and also in the background Everest and what's it, I think that one was one of my favorite ones
when we first arrived in Gokyo. It was such a beautiful like vista, wasn't it?
And
a difficult day. There's a glacier, is it Khumbu Glacier, that glacier?
I think so.
Full of rocks, isn't it? There's just rocks, like rock slides. We had a really good day that day. We were like playing petanque on the frozen lake, kind of trying to get our stone closest to the biggest stone. Yeah. What about you, Em? Any highlights?
Yeah, I think it could be the glacier as well, because I felt really unique, like such a like unique.
There's a dog that's going mental every time we mention
anything.
He
wants to add something.
Yeah,
I guess like the glacier was like so unique, and like I had no clue what a glacier really was. So like just discovering that, and like it was super super interesting. And like I don't know like if I am ever gonna do something like that in my life ever again. It was crazy, and like
I also don't know if there are like any place like that.
Yeah,
because it's a glacier, but it doesn't even feel like you're in a glacier because it's full of these rocks, and every now and then you hear those rocks falling, and there's at some point no path because it's eroded. And it's such a special place.
Tripologist Lucas really enjoyed, I think on a deep sort of visceral level, you enjoyed the idea of a rock falling down and sort of landing on a frozen lake.
Oh yeah, I really liked it.
It spoke to you in a real potent way.
It's so satisfying.
Yeah, because sort of you're walking through this glacier, and every now and again there's like a tumble of some rockfall, and they'll cascade down the cliff faces onto the frozen lake. It's quite satisfying, but obviously you've got to be there at the right time to see the real big ones.
It's also a bit scary, right?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah,
I think the whole trek, in some sense, is a little scary. Mm-hmm. I know that for me, the first few days, I like had an internal monologue of like, this is difficult, like I'm already hot, sweaty, stinky, like can I do 20 more days of this? I had like a lot of negative thoughts that became silenced over time through just perseverance and also just like humor. I think we really looked after each other on that trek in a lot of ways. You know, we all got sick to some extent with acute mountain sickness. And, you know, you got headaches, Emmy had a twisted ankle, I had some gastronomic issues. I think what was nice is we all looked after each other and we had a real kinship and a bond, and we got each other through some difficult times. Notably, we had a long day that day we got to Gokyo, and then we decided to climb Gokyo Ri, which is like a 600 meter hike to the top of a hill that very day. Tell the audience how we got through the last bit of that hike.
Yeah, that was a tough day. Because especially like mentally, we reached it after, let's say, 4 hours of walking or so. We reached Kokyo. And then we went lunch, and then we met those people who said, yeah, you should really go to the mountain for a sunset. But it was a tough one, right? Reaching the hill, reaching the mountain.
Really tough. And I employed a psychological technique.
Oh, which, yeah. I love that one.
Yeah, which is just to unleash all the hatred and bile in your own mind. We were just like, oh, screw this walk, screw my shoes, screw the rest of this peak. We were sort of marching forward with hatred in our hearts, but it really propelled us to the top of the mountain. Sometimes you've got to embrace negative energy to shoot yourself up in such trying conditions. Any other funny memories from the trip?
So many.
You being annoyed at the people that didn't close the door in the lodges.
Oh, yeah. That's kind of... Yeah, mm-hmm. We should elaborate on that as well. The lodges, they are so cold. When the sun goes down, it's immediately so cold. And insulation doesn't really exist. There's always only this big fireplace and everyone's sitting around it because that's the only type of heat you will get before you go to your cold bed.
Yeah.
And everyone's sitting there with like jackets on and like probably wearing more than during the day outside. Because it's like minus 15 or so at that point outside.
Yeah.
And then the Sherpas, it looks like they don't really feel a difference between 2 degrees and 20 degrees or so. They just leave the door open and you feel the cold winds just in your face and whoa.
Yeah, they kept on leaving the door open, and you really took aversion to it. You were like, because on the back of the menus, it's always saying like, oh, your comfort is our satisfaction. We're really here to help. But that didn't extend to door closing ability. They left those doors open. And they're like, anatomically, the Sherpas are so different from us. They just can embrace the cold, embrace the hiking. They carry enormous weights on their back and on their heads up these mountains, whereas we were tired from, you know, just carrying our 10 kilogram bags. Yeah. Really crazy.
They're built different, definitely. It's exhausting to be 24/7 cold.
Yeah,
and for them, it doesn't really affect them. Or it looks like.
Yeah, not at all.
Used to it, I guess.
Yeah, looks like it.
They're used to it, and I think just biologically, they're just a little bit different from us. Like, they're acclimatized already and everything. I think, like, the cold, washing was an issue, right? You have to pay for hot showers, gas showers, otherwise cold showers. Did you guys take a cold shower? I took a few.
I took one.
Yeah?
Yeah.
It makes you cold for a long time, doesn't it?
Yeah. I warmed up my sleeping bag beforehand.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a must-have. And apart from that, I didn't really have that many showers anyway. Even the warm showers, if you go out of the shower, it's cold immediately, so...
Well, that's the thing. I think like part of this whole trekking experience is like embracing discomfort in some sense, right? You don't need as many showers as you think. And I think the whole thing is designed to make you uncomfortable. You're stretched, you're tired, your feet hurt. You're like, my bag was uncomfortable digging into my shoulders all the time. There's a million and one things to complain about, but I think that, you know, you don't need to be as comfortable as you think you do.
I think this is a good time to return back here to the Tropology studio. Adam, are you enjoying listening to Emmy and Lucas? I'm having such a blast hearing this interview back.
Very much so, yeah. And I also, you know, I'd like to think I'm your best friend. And to know that you were spending time, something as amazing as this trek through the Himalayas, with two wonderful people, it kind of puts to bed any worries that I had.
Yeah, it's amazing the friends you make whilst traveling. And these podcasts make such amazing documents, because I know sometimes when I'm missing Wagner, I listen back to the old Tropology episode with Wagner in it. When I'm missing you, I listen to the whole back catalogue of Tropology. And I know that in years to come, I'm going to listen back to this episode and feel like I'm back on that trek with Emmy and Lucas. Such an enjoyable thing to have these audio recordings and video recordings if you go to youtube.com/@tropologypodcast, eh? But now we'll go on a brief meditation break. Ah, and our conscious minds are returning back into our schools. Adam, are you ready to hear a little bit more from Emmy and Lucas as they describe our trek in the Himalayas?
I am. I love listening to them. I can't wait.
Let's listen.
One of my favourite things was the little stops that we had. Like, we were all going the same place, like, or the same pace, rather. And I think one of my favourite kind of moments with you guys is, like, when you exert yourself, you finally get to the top, and then we just had, like, a rest and just stillness for, like, 15 minutes. We took frequent breaks. Do you have a favourite rest stop situation from memory?
You got one?
I think, like, the one that we all remember was the one with the crows and you trying to give Pringles to the crows and one of them getting addicted, I guess.
Yeah. And, I tried to train a crow to sort of, I've heard that you can trade with crows, right? So yeah. Emmy had some Pringles and I tried to sort of like tempt him towards us and he loved those Pringles, didn't he, that crow?
And then one porter asked you like if they can have some of your water, and you just say yes, and they just like splash water like all over their face with a weird noise.
He waterboarded himself with your water bottle.
Yeah,
he didn't want to touch his mouth to my bottle, so he just held it like above his face.
Yeah,
and it just came. And
he kind of drowned himself, didn't he?
It was like waterboarding.
And then just after that, something which we now understand is power on the fires, but a Sherpa walked past and just started filling his pockets with yak feces, didn't he?
Yeah, at that point we had no clue why.
Yeah, at that point in the trek, the idea of yak feces being used for fuel was still completely alien to us.
Kind of strange. Now, if we see someone doing that, like, we understand it's for the fuel, but at first it was a bit... Yeah,
that's interesting.
Unusual.
Was also a real fresh one.
Yeah. They dry them later, I guess. Emmy, was there anything about the trek that was harder than you imagined or that you wouldn't want to do again?
I think I was expecting the cold and the lack of comfort. I was kind of prepared, I guess. Maybe when I got my ankle twisted and then we had to keep going, I guess this was a bit... Like, I was a bit worried, but then, I mean, you made me go to hike at 4 a.m. To go see the sunset that we actually didn't see because it was snowing, but...
Yeah, I tried to motivate you to get to Carrington Tower.
Yeah, and you did. It was, and after that, it was fine.
Lucas, same question?
The one point in Gorikchep, that was also one of the highest places we've stayed, or the highest. Quite bad headache from the altitude.
Yeah.
Was also the same morning of the hike to the sunrise. I had to skip it because of the headache. Yeah. And I was really thinking like, oh shit, do I still want to continue with the two passes? Mm-hmm. Or I've seen Everest Base Camp already. I can also just go on my own back to Lukla, to the airport.
Yeah.
Because it was really bad at that point. But luckily, you supported me and... It's also mainly in the nights and in the evenings that I had the headaches.
Yeah.
So, and then we went down a bit to Lobice, I think, first.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was already starting to get better. So I think that was mentally the hardest for me.
Totally. Yeah. I think I was immensely proud of the way we all handled sort of the altitude sickness thing. Because there was one day where both me and Em felt absolutely awful. It was that hike to the viewpoint in Namche Bazaar, and that walk was probably the single hardest part of the trek for us. I think we were both sort of like welcoming death walking up the mountain, like feeling like terrible. And then you obviously had like bad headaches a little bit later on. I think that those are the make or break moments, because we met many people who got altitude sickness and had to turn back, had to go back. We met a Danish guy in Namche who was like, I think 40% of his group were like trying to get helicoptered off the mountain. He went with 5 people. So really, we persevered. I'm happy that we finished it. We aimed to do 3 passes at first. We ended up doing 2, but it was kind of spurious and up in the air. And I think in general, I've never done anything like this before. And I felt like we were such a great team.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It was also really nice to start all together in Fagding, and we also ended it there. So
Yeah, that's true. Because you flew from Lucknow and took a Jeep, which was, you know, a little bit hellish, but okay. I missed you a lot.
Aww.
I think that, I really want to encourage people to, like, if they feel like they want a holiday that's a little bit different, I mean, go and do something unusual like this. Like, how did you stumble across the Himalayas as a potential holiday destination? And do you feel like you've had a holiday as well, I guess? I'm wondering.
I definitely had a feeling of holiday, but it's different than the usual, of course. It's much harder. It's not a holiday to physically relax.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Also mentally, maybe not.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to have a vacation in the nature and like impressive nature, like aggressive nature.
I like that term, aggressive nature.
Yeah. You know what I mean, right?
Inhospitable, kind of sharp, jagged, mountainous terrain.
Yeah, and thinking like, why would people want to live here?
Yeah.
It's so pretty, but it's not made for people to live here. It's insane.
Well, the one town that felt the most clear was Gorokchep, right?
Definitely.
Which is, I think it's the highest settlement on Earth, maybe. But we met a Sherpa lady called Hepa, who was one of the most miserable human beings we've ever met, no? And the living room in that place, I mean, the common area, was like almost 45 degrees.
It was so crooked.
Yeah, the entire accommodation was a bit, it was probably the worst place we stayed, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I think
for
so
sure.
too.
But also the whole surroundings there, it's so far away from everything.
Yeah. Everything is there's ice everywhere. You can't really do much outside.
Yeah.
It's so cold.
Oh, yeah. We saw then the hairdresser there.
Yeah, in the whole of Gorokchep, there's just a hairdresser, a medical clinic, which is closed, and Hepa's place.
Yeah.
How do you think that this trek's like, how do you think it fits into your like wider journey, because trekking in Nepal was always part of the plan, but you're like you've finished studying now and you're like going to go on to have a very lucrative career in France. So how has this like factored in? How's it changed you, do you think, or your experience in Nepal in general? I guess
the trek, the main reason why I wanted to do it was just like seeing Everest, I guess, was like a goal. Because Everest, like, you know, you can say to people, it's in Everest, which is kind of cool. But also, I guess, like, the challenging aspect of it, like, as I said, I was expecting the cold. I was expecting, like, all of the lack of comfort. And I guess, like, knowing that I willingly did that and, like, it was difficult at some points. And I guess, like, having done that and, like, knowing that I can, like, be in this kind of environment and still manage to like function, I guess. And I see that as a challenge a little bit, I guess.
Totally.
So to know that I can do many kind of different activities, I guess.
I think also just like putting yourself out there and going on a trek with complete strangers like says something about you as a human, says something about you as a traveler that you're like prepared to do that. And I think it kind of opens up so many doors because you know you're capable of this kind of extreme travel in the future. It's like, I think that's a really cool thing. Talk a little bit more about, you said that you kind of wanted to see Everest because it was, you had an idea of like, you'll be able to say to people.
Yeah.
And I definitely had that as well. Yeah. Like the reason I chose to do, you've done Annapurna as well, but the reason I chose to do a trek that involved EBC as opposed to Annapurna was because everyone's heard of Everest.
Yeah.
We, I think, all felt like the aesthetic letdown of the trip to some extent was Everest itself.
Yeah. I think what we remember, like of the landscapes and everything, is not necessarily Everest.
Yeah.
It's a nice mountain, but it's not like the most beautiful. I guess the Amandablam would be like the one that we remember more. I guess I don't know about you, like if there is a specific place or mountain that you like.
Yeah, same. Yeah. And also the thing is that I don't think we've ever had a point or a moment that we thought, oh yeah, Everest really looks like the biggest mountain here.
Yeah, maybe just for a second at Gokyo, but we didn't even really realize it was Everest at that point. For most of the time, it looks smaller than Lhotse, right?
Definitely.
And I guess a big part of the trek, we didn't know exactly where Everest was. And we had to ask people, like, when we went to the base camp, which mountain is Everest?
And I think we'd have all been disappointed if we went to EBC only.
Yeah, maybe.
Holding up Everest as being like the big bastion of the trip,
mm-hmm.
and then turn back at EBC. I think we'd have all felt like we... All the best stuff, the Chukong Glacier, Gokyo that you mentioned, like this was all after EBC. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I would recommend to people to, if you're going to go to EBC, do a couple of passes as well, continue, mm-hmm. do a loop. Because the real good stuff, I think, I felt was after Everest.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
The base camp is, I mean, it's an interesting place to go, I guess. But, yeah. I mean, the base camp itself was not the most interesting. I feel like it was more like going to... The glacier and stuff is maybe, I mean, I liked it. I don't know.
Yeah, it was nice. I put a little picture of myself, a little passport picture on the rock with Listen to Topology on the back of it. We had a fun time. I think that's the thing. Everything was fun because, to some extent, because we were together. And I think we were having jokes and laughter the whole time. I think if I was on my own, I'd have been fairly miserable most of the time, maybe. I mean, all the cold, all the kind of uncleanliness, all the hiking. It was kind of you guys that got me through it for sure. And I think that's a testament to the kind of friendships you can form whilst traveling. I'm really just so pleased to be a traveler because... In what other world would we have met this kind of European Union of hikers? I think it's really cool.
Yeah. It would also have been like a total different trip, right? If you would do this alone.
Totally.
And you could have met people along the way, but would have still been much different kind of bond.
Definitely.
Because it was like, yeah, 24/7 always together. So it was super strong from the beginning.
Were there any moments where you felt frustrated, annoyed, upset? Ready to call it quits?
Not really. I think we got along so well.
Hope for that potato fight.
Yeah.
we had a heated debate over the glycemic index of a potato versus noodles. And it turns out that Emmy was right. The potato, it does raise your glycemic index more. And that was a recurring theme. I think Emmy was right about most things, yeah, most of the time.
I don't know about that, but the potatoes I was right about, yeah.
Yeah.
When in doubt, follow Emmy.
Yeah. We got, I mean, and Lucas is such a... beautiful, cordial, kind of kind person. The only time when given a cup of tea, you would turn into sort of tyrannical despot. but other than that, you were beautiful, both of you. I think it was great. We played a lot of cards, didn't we? Played a lot of cards, a lot of time spent in front of the fire. But really, you're so tired, you kind of eat and go to bed a lot of the time, right? You're hiking so often every day.
Yeah, I think mostly we were in bed at 8 already, yeah. Or something like that.
Yeah. Me and Lucas shared a room like most nights. It was quite funny. We'd both wake up in the night because you're going to bed at 8 and waking up at 8. So there's like 12 hours of sleep every night. So of course, there's periods where you like wake up, have a little chat. We're sneezing, we're coughing, we're going to the bathroom. Strange things happen at altitude. So yeah, crazy times. Anything else either of you want to say? Any final notes, any messages to the Tropology audience? You can say hi to your mums if you want. I mean,
yeah, I would like to have like joined for the jeep ride as well.
Okay.
One way would have been nice.
Yeah.
But I was a bit short on time, so I took the flight. Yeah, the flight is also super interesting from Lukla.
Similarly, I'd have liked to have experienced the flight, I think. Yeah. Both me and Emmy wanted to experience the flight after that 18 hours in a jeep.
Yeah,
But yeah. I think that's an interesting point because you leaving felt strange to me and Em.
Mm-hmm.
Because we'd been together for so long. And me and Em started, we did one day of walking without you at the start. But then for you to leave, me and Em still had another day of walking to go and another day in the Jeep after that and another day after that. So you left a little bit early and it felt like kind of the team was losing a kind of a piece of its soul. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we'd have liked to have you in the Jeep as well.
Yeah. Would it be nice?
But I think we'll commit to doing a hike in the future somewhere, perhaps in Belgium, perhaps in France, perhaps in the Peak or the Lake Districts of the UK. But one day we'll rejoin and climb those Rees together once more. It's been such a pleasure having you on the podcast. I know that the audience will be desperate to ask you questions. They can do that at tropologypodcast@gmail.com or why not grow our tiny little Instagram? It's at tropologypodcast on Instagram. And if you think, my God, I like this, but I hate the fact that it's free. then we've got Patreon. It's Tripology Podcast on Patreon. Thank you so much, Lucas from the tiny but fierce nation of Belgium, Emmy from the 2009 World Handball Championship winners, France. I've been Alan from the UK, and we'll see you all on the next episode. And now, let's hear from Adam. Adam, what do you think about this podcast? What do you think about these two individuals? Tell me all.
That's nice.
Oh, there we go, Adam. That's the interview. Oh, so lovely to talk to those. They've all gone their separate ways now. Emmy's travelling through India. Lucas is back in Belgium. I'm continuing my journey on through South Asia. I'm sure I'll see them both again at some point in the near future. But so amazing. Thank you to them for being on the podcast. And for coming on that trek with me.
Yeah. You know, thanks to Emmy and Lucas for spending the time. And I guess I've said this a few times before, but seeing the way that Tripology might shape itself in the future, interviewing people that you're sharing these amazing experiences with. I mean, they sounded like two wonderful companions.
Yeah, I think it's cool to have you listen to those recordings and then make comments on it. I think that's a good little thing we can do with Tripology. If I meet someone interesting, if you meet someone interesting on the road, we can sort of bring them into the other person's lives through the Tripology studio. It's been such a pleasure sharing that interview with you and with the Tripology audience. I think on the next episode of Tripology, who knows where the world will take us. I'll be in Pokhara in Nepal still and planning my onward journey to India. Who knows where you'll be? Perhaps Canada, perhaps the world, probably Canada. But who knows the adventures that will go on together with you, the Tripology audience. It's ever such an exciting time to be alive. And I just can't wait for the rest of the adventure. My trip in the Himalayas, it was truly a transformative one. And I'm looking forward to more transformative experiences in the coming months. Adam, I don't know about you, but the present is starting to feel like a lonely grey cloud indeed. And oh, I can see peeking out beyond the horizon. It's a bright and vibrant tomorrow. Will you go there with me and then on to next week?
I will. I miss you dearly, mate. Let's meet up in the Patreon episode.
Yeah, let's go there now. Bye.
Bye.